Thin Digital Line. Policing in the year 2045.
Hello, I'm Jason Harwin and welcome to the latest episode of Thin Digital Line. In today's episode, I'm delighted to be joined by, firstly, Amy Smith, who's the Director of Data for the Metropolitan Police and the Co-Chair of the National Police Chiefs Council's Data Analytics Board. Welcome, Amy.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Secondly, Teresa Ashforth, who's the Interim Head of Data for the MPCC Data Office.
Hi, Jason, nice to meet you.
And lastly, Graham Adamson, who's the Head of Architecture and Data at the award-winning digital transformation company, Exception. Welcome, Graham.
Thanks very much for having me.
Okay, today's episode, we're going to be exploring how policing is looking to maximise the opportunities from the vast volumes of data it collects to not only just improve productivity, but deliver better outcomes as we move towards 2045. So let's get started. Amy, first one for you. Tell us about your role and responsibilities as the co-chair of the Data Analytics Board.
So the role is a volunteer role because there's not enough to do in the Metropolitan Police Service, apparently, with data. So I co-chair with Chris Todd, who's an ACC from PSNI. The job of the chairs of that board is to try and get policing to do things once and well with its approach to data and analytics. You know, there are 43 plus organisations who all have their own independent ideas about how they want to do things locally. But the reality is, data is a national asset and we've got to look after it and we've got to get the value out of it, and that's what the board is there to do.
So obviously for listeners, why is data so important to policing?
Oh my gosh, after it's people and we look after them particularly very well, it is probably its most important asset. It is critical to everything we do because it's all about decision making. Everything we collect, everything we house, everything we store, everything we utilise to make a decision, whether that is forensics, biometrics, intelligence, video, it's all essentially data. And I think we've got to a point where we have to understand that, a bit like we know how much it costs to have our cars and our technology and our uniform and our CS gas on the balance sheet, we need to know how much our data is costing us and what potential there is in there. And that to me is why it's so important. You can no longer make decisions as a human being on the same levels of data we were making 20 years ago. It is too voluminous and it's coming in at such a great velocity that now data is an asset that will help us take opportunities on behalf of the public, but only if we really look after it and think about how we want to use it.
So do you think police is taking it seriously?
Oh yeah, I think so. Well, it depends in comparison to what. So since 1829, has data been the most important thing ever? No. There are things that are right up there and more important, and people will still talk about cops on the beat. They'll still talk about neighbourhood policing, and those things are really important. But I have seen a definite sea change in the last 5 years of up-and-coming senior leaders, certainly, wanting to really understand what data is about, how to look after it and harness it for their frontline, and to be more transparent with the public too. So I think they're starting to take it far more seriously than they did 5 years ago.
Yeah, we'll come back to that leadership, importance of leadership really as well. So, Teresa.
Hi, Jason. So I am the Interim Head of Data for MPCC. And what we're doing really is taking direction from Amy and Chris as chairs of the board to set up a sustainable, fully funded, fully resourced national data capability that can help forces understand what they should be collecting, keeping, storing, using. So we've got a bit of a consistency across how policing is using its data. There's lots of other things we want to do. We want to be able to manage our national data assets. So along with the point that Amy just made about data being a national asset, what we've got at the moment is that 43 force model. Yeah. Our data is being treated locally. And what that means is that decisions are made locally without really understanding what the national implications of that could be. So what we're doing with the Data Office is trying to do some of that heavy lifting at the centre that can then help forces really, really understand what they've got, why they've got it, and how they then subsequently use it.
So, Amy, in terms of what's happening in this space at the minute, just give us a flavour for listeners of what policing's doing around data.
Yeah, oh my gosh. I mean, you haven't got time on the podcast to know about all the things that are happening with data, but let me give you some big headlines about how we're trying to marshal as a sector to get the foundations right, because there are some absolute pockets of genius happening out there in different forces, whether that's redaction or utilising data visualisation tools. There's lots happening. But nationally, it's a bit of a slower pace. We're trying to go as fast as we can, but you've got to get chief constables to agree. So a couple of things we've already done that are starting to shift the dial are, first of all, we've introduced a data maturity assessment across every force. So for the first time ever in the sector, we can compare apples with pears. So how well have people got their strategy right? What technology are they investing in? Have they got the right people in the right place with the right skills? What's their data literacy campaign like? We can now compare forces. And that's not about, I mean, chiefs love a competition, don't they? So that's not about ranking and rating them, but that is about being able to say collectively, when you add that up as a sector, there's a real maturity gap here, here and here. And then I, as a co-chair of the board, can start to drive the plan to improve that. We've made a huge stride forward in investment in introducing the government's digital and data framework, defining what we actually mean when we say digital and data roles, career pathways for people, giving people, I'll be honest, hope that there is a career in data and digital in policing in a way that I don't think we've ever invested in individuals before. Because you're going to ask me about 2045 later, and I know we've got to have the right people starting now and the right career path starting now to really make sure we can meet what's coming in 2045. And more widely, we're doing work with a number of the coordination committees to try and understand, well, what data products do you want? What data visualisations do you need to drive performance management? What data visualisations do you need to really truly understand your workforce dynamics? All of those things will come back to a data expert needing to provide the information. And finally, the one thing I would say, and we have not solved this yet, I'd like to look into the future and hope that we can, data quality. So we can do anything you like from the centre, and we can do anything we like as a profession, but until the officers and the staff on the front line put the data right first time into the systems that we employ, we're on the back foot always. So we are now holding forces to account on their data quality at a national level. So are they contributing well to the national asset? And if they're not, we can point that out to the chiefs and hold them to account.
Yeah, I was just going to jump in there, and that's where actually sometimes league tables can be hugely helpful for us. We're not allowed to publish them. You know as well as I do, Jason, it is a competitive world out there, isn't it, in policing? For us to understand the spread of data quality challenges we've got, to understand whether that links to the technologies that forces are using, whether it links to their training, whether it links to their leadership, their culture, is all part of what we're trying to do. And I think that league table, when we slice and dice the data, has actually been quite useful, hasn't it, for us to sort of build the products and services that we need then to go and tackle it. Because we know that if you get it right, as close to the point of creation as possible, that data is going to do so much more for you than if you have to rework the data, correct the data before you can actually do anything with it.
And why that's really important, sorry, this is me,
nice,
Teresa,
right?
On the mic now.
You're going to regret this.
Why that's really important, because if you think back to some of the other conversations you've had, say with Al Murray about AI, all the chiefs want to be Man City. They all want to be up there, top of the league.
Some would argue that's not the best team, but they will.
Well,
that's not for now.
You want to be around about 12th in the table at Nottingham Forest level is where you want to be. But seriously, but people want to be up there, and they talk a good game on AI. They talk a good game on data science. Can't actually deliver it without the right data in the right place, accessible to actually utilise those kind of techniques against. So this is where it starts. And this is where we will also be, I think, the rocket booster behind anybody who wants to use artificial intelligence. We've got to get the basics right. And people might find that dry and boring. The reality is it isn't, because one directly drives the other.
Poor data equals poor decision making, realistically.
Absolutely.
So Graham, just again, from your side, looking outside policing and what's happening in the other sectors, what's happening in terms of how other sectors are utilising data at the minute? Is there any learning for policing?
Well, I was glad that what Amy said about the complexity of the police, which is different from other sectors, because it's a multi-headed beast. You know, there's 43 forces, there's a number of inspectorates, there's a number of other organisations like the College of Policing and various other organisations. So there's no one master in charge of it all, which is obviously a problem. Compared to other sectors which may have regulators which actually set out, this is what our outcomes are, this is what we want to achieve, and therefore, and there's some statutory or regulatory control over it all, that drives in management and management focus for quite a bit of it. So that's a kind of headline thing around the whole governance side of things in the first place. The second point is this, is you touched on, was management focus. I mean, there's a competitive edge in other circumstances to either grow more or do better things with what they've got, if you like. So the reliance on data there to make those corporate decisions and probably operational decisions are absolutely key to actually, at the end of the day, the bottom line for a number of things. So that's a cultural thing as well as a governance thing, which is right at the very top. And I think it was Amy that mentioned then investing in people and in infrastructure, I'll call it infrastructure or technology, to allow these things to happen and for people to experiment easily and then scale it. If it works, we'll scale it out and roll it up. Now, private sector can do that relatively quickly because there's not a big, call it supply chain, involved in terms of procurement or other aspects to that. And that's one thing that possibly is a challenge to who do we buy, what do we buy? The end of the day, a lot of organisations will want to make sure they buy something that is sustainable in organisation. I think this does lend itself to the police. I know that, Jason, you and I have had conversations of making more of what you've got and using common tools rather than lots of esoteric shiny toys that you can't get support for. So that you've actually, you know, talking about frameworks there, we're talking about how you're going to get a framework to have that data platform sorted out. So focusing on things that will be easy to support and easy to adopt, I think, as well. And the other thing is try and make small things rather than doing big leaps forward. So there's some things that you can do just to improve even your existing systems to get better data of your existing systems, because some of the investment in some of the case management and records management systems, they're really broad systems, but half the people don't know what to do with them. So there's a big training thing there. So I think there's a raft of things, never mind the technology. I found it more to do with the people and processes and governance things than the technology itself, because the technology itself can be solved. It's the other side that is more tricky.
And it links into Amy's point, doesn't it, about culture, people, again, make it clear what you want and don't want around it. So Teresa, from your side, and again, lots of people will say data's boring. Right. Careful, you don't attack me. I'm just saying what people have said.
I'm hurt.
Please,
can
you
Jason,
be very
I'm
clear
hurt.
On the podcast? No one has said that. I don't think they dare, knowing you, both you two individuals. But importantly, looking at the importance of data, as we've talked about already, and again, the importance of leadership. Because again, I think it's very warming to hear, Amy, that you've said about some leaders coming forward saying they want to know more. But I think there is a recognition more needs to be done about the future leaders as well. So give us a flavour of what the thinking is at the moment and what's going to happen about that in the future.
Okay, so gosh, it'd be 3 years ago now, Amy, we spoke with Neil Basu. He was the director for SCC. And we kind of highlighted in a nice way that data was a gap. There was no content on SCC around data and what
so
the response.
So SCC is the senior command course for the
right,
chief
yes.
officers for the future.
Yeah, sorry, we like acronyms in policing as well, don't we? As well as league tables. So Amy and I managed to get a day at the Strategic Command course 3 years ago to talk to the next generation of chief officers about data. And this was not about talking about compliance. This was talking about value. It was talking about the opportunity that data presents. It was talking about what their responsibilities as chief officers would be around data and how they might want to upskill their officers and staff and actually drive more insight and more value from the data that they hold. So we've been doing that now for 3 years. We're about to go into our fourth year. I think it's fair to say that every year we see greater awareness and greater understanding among the cohort. So that's really, really important. That's really encouraging. We've now got a day and a half on what is now the Executive Leadership Programme. We've commissioned a game. So we play Top Trumps meets Monopoly meets Game of Life.
We probably games aged are ourselves. As well.
There are, and we probably aged ourselves horribly with those three games as well, haven't we? But what we're finding is that people are starting to ask questions about data in a way that they've never before. And that's, for us, that's just brilliant, because sometimes when you're working in this space in a police force, and I was in Durham for 10 years, it can be quite an isolating role. You can be one of one. So actually, when you're in a room full of the next generation who are asking you really, really good questions about why, what, how, and the questions they then need to ask of their own force when they go back is really, really encouraging. So that's the big thing that we've done. There's lots that we're doing around value, which Amy's already talked about, and I think that will help, particularly with the conversations we might have with PCCs, because it's not just chief constables that we're working with, is it? It's the 43 PCCs as well. I think there's lots that we're doing around the portfolios that we've built within the data board, so skills and literacy, for example. So we're looking to work with the College of Policing to expand on what products are available that forces can then use themselves in their when they're back. So there's lots that we're doing. I think it starts at the top for me, because actually we've just come away from a practitioners event, haven't we, last week, where, you know, we had 200 data and analytical specialists in a room talking about it. Brilliant. The sort of expertise at that level is great. We need now to sort of upskill our sort of senior leaders so they invest, because a lot of this stuff won't happen without investment.
No, and again, I think it's a testament to the importance of data about the energy that's going in, not just now, but has been over the last 3 years to get the senior leaders prepared for. And let's be honest, the police and crime commissioners or deputy mayors, depending on the structure of the forces, making sure they're asking the right questions of chief constables and other chief officers is really important as well, isn't it?
And I think that's just one more point to make on that, if I can, Jason. So I think we're now having conversations with the HMI CFRS, because that's really important. If you look at the Peel inspection regime, there's not a specific data question in there. And I don't think you can be outstanding investigating crime or protecting vulnerable people if you're not good at data. It feels like they're two sides of the same coin. So we need to start asking our chiefs some really hard questions at Peel. And then we can start to really understand what it means operationally.
And warmingly, again, I've noticed the HMICFRS proposals for the inspection for the next 3 years includes data, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So we want to make sure that the data office that we're building and the board can actually support the HMIC in asking the right questions.
Yeah, yeah. Graham, do you want to come in?
That was to my point, actually, about the regulatory side of things, if you like, or the compliance side of things. If you're not going to get measured on it, you're not going to get anything done, if you like. So that's stating the bleeding obvious to some extent, but it's true. And yeah, the appeal system doesn't actually talk about it a great deal. So you're not surprised there's not a great deal of focus on it.
Yeah, okay. But there will be. That's the important
thing. Yeah, there will be. That's
yeah, good. And I think there is a disconnect at the moment between appeal performance and what we see from the maturity assessments that Amy referenced earlier. There is a disconnect between the two, and we want to try and plug that gap.
And that's a podcast in itself about HMIC inspection and regime and everything else, isn't it?
I'd be up for that. What a hoot. Who doesn't want to listen to that one?
You think data's dry?
Yeah, right. Okay, so let's just start moving it on then. So we've talked about what's happening now. We've talked about some of the plans over the past few years and a few years coming forward. But obviously, this podcast is about 2045. And Amy, as you've shared, you will still be policing at that stage.
Still
all being
be
well, I hope, for continuity and inspiration and leadership. But technology, we've touched on it, and I know ultimately data is so important. Without the proper data, you can't get the benefit of technology. But what's happening around the technology piece and going towards 2045 that'll help with data as well?
Yeah, I mean, God, you have to take yourself back. What were we doing 20 years ago to really try and think how to answer that question? So 20 years ago, I'd only just joined the Met Police. I was sitting in an intelligence unit in Wandsworth Borough Intelligence Unit, and there were two ladies, both called Mary, employed to enter the stop slips that the cops had been collecting on the street, yellow slips. That's where we were 20 years ago. We thought that was really effective. And then we as analysts would then geocode them and map them. And we were like, okay, let's see where stops have happened against crime. And that was an incredibly manual process. So much has developed in society since then. So when I try and look forward to 2045, I think a lot of the technology that policing needs in 2045 is probably available to it now as a key enabler to be able to get the information that is required in the right place at the right time to the right people. In the private sector, all of that already exists. Our problem is time frame and budget and doing it once and well. And I'll be honest with you, Chief Constable's giving up some power of discretion to enable us to invest properly as a sector. And that's why we're really focusing hard on getting the next wave of chiefs to really understand that, because somebody somewhere is collectively going to have to make an investment decision that will benefit us all in 2045. So without technology investment, we will not get access to the data that we need. We won't be able to filter out all of the data that we don't, quite frankly. I mean, we're not shy of the amount of data we've got. We've got too much, and it's not very good in some places. I think data science and AI will be absolutely pivotal to everything we do. It will drive decision making. We will trust AI and data science techniques in particular in a way in 2045 that I think we're a little bit shy of, or gung-ho, depends on which end of the spectrum you're on now. But we've got to be planning for a model of policing that is fundamentally different than we've got now. And we've got to start that conversation now, A, because it'll take that long to invest and get the data right. But B, the policing operating model as we know it, Bobby's on the beat, talking to Mrs. McGinns and having a radio and a camera, we're going to be in a completely different, we could be in a completely different place for the better for the public. But that is going to take, culturally take a lot of people a long time to get their heads around. And we've got to make sure that the people we recruit into policing in the next 20 years are actually capable of doing those roles, whether that's a frontline cop, whether that's a data scientist, and probably a load of roles that we haven't yet even understood we even need because they don't exist yet. But that's where I think we're going. To counterbalance that, I would also say by 2045, there's not going to be a single person alive who doesn't understand how important data is, because they're using it all day, every day. So access to information that you hold, what are you doing with it? Transparency of understanding what the police are doing with it. That culture's started, but it's in the banks of sort of Big Brother watch and journalists. I think the public will be in that space probably in the next 5 to 10 years, and they'll be asking really hard questions about what we're doing with data. By 2045, it'll be expected that we share that like a bank, like other regulated environments do. So we've got to get to the right balance of, I suppose, privacy and openness with really exploiting great technology capabilities.
Yes, it's really interesting, wasn't it? I know we're going to look at the workforce and necessary change, and I know we're going to talk about reform, police reform, so not just about decision making, but actually, is it structured? Has it got the right systems? Is it interfacing all the bits and pieces that we know is very important for policing for the future as well? So we'll come to that. So it'd be really interesting, yep. Amy, how that conversation goes. Teresa?
I think it goes to the point that Andy Cook made, didn't it, in his State of the Nation address, where he talked about the uplift.
Yeah.
And that actually the uplift should be about finding the resources that you need, regardless of whether they're officers or staff. And I think the work that we're doing in data will do exactly that, because I think we're going to find ourselves needing skills that we currently don't have. And if we want to be able to compete and attract the good people, the really bright people, the people who want to come in and not play with our data, that sounds flippant, but you know, we've got a really, really rich data set. Yeah. There are some really clever people out there who want to come into policing. We should be able to attract those now.
And I know, I've been speaking to colleagues about the hamstrung by the fact it's about police officer numbers at the minute, which is not the solution. Whilst police officer numbers are important, it's not the only solution to do the things that we need to do, isn't it?
No.
Graham, just back to yourself very briefly, just in terms of, you touched on it in your first part really about technology. Is there anything particularly outside policing and technology where you see some real fruits of the benefits of the technology helping improve outcomes for other sectors?
I think there's multiple toys or tools to play with, put it that way. The whole area within cloud capability for a start, not all the forces are on cloud or even have access to all those capabilities, which is going to hold them back, because you'll be very difficult to deploy AI solutions without having access to readily accessible tool sets, if you like, and deployable tool sets. But then that then goes then to something around, I think, other areas that can come from the top, which is to do with standards and integration mechanisms to actually bring a lot of this together. I think it was Amy that said there's already existing technologies out there that we'll probably use. I mean, banks and other sectors have used data warehouses and data lakes for, you know, now for quite some time. They're pretty good at it. The forces can start investing in that. Standards come to play for a lot of that kind of stuff. There's other stuff that we clearly, things like image recognition, there's other industries that are using that for their own purposes. We're working in the nuclear sector, which is looking at using a lot of these things. I know that we've got drones and various other things that could be used as well. But those are already out there. It's how to scale them and actually use them effectively.
Teresa, we touched on about the importance of data. And again, in one of our previous episodes, we talked about the value of data to serious and organised crime, particularly police data. It's a lot of value in it, isn't it? So going back to the point about the journey is not just about utilising the data correctly, it's making sure it's secure. And importantly for the public, making sure they've got assurance that we're not using it for the wrong reasons, unless obviously linked to crime and other reasons around it as well, where we've got powers to do that. How are we making sure that the security is as much of a focus around data as using data itself?
Okay, I think there's a couple of things to sort of highlight. There's what we do proactively. So that is making sure that we've got compliance with the sort of data protection regulations. It's looking at what sort of cybersecurity technologies, and making sure we've got regular security audits, training. We've talked about training a lot today. I think it's always going to be a golden thread through some of this. And awareness raising, so regular programmes of training with officers and staff, and the college are pivotal in delivering that for us. Access controls and making sure that whatever capabilities and technologies we're buying, we can make sure we've got access controls built into those. We have some really good incident response plans now. So whenever there's breaches, we can respond quite quickly. That's been important. And we've also got some full-time resources that are supporting the Police Information Assurance Board and other sort of coordination committee leads as well. And then I think there's the reactive part of the work. In the recent PS&I breach, for example, it was Claire Vickers-Pearson from West Yorkshire who supported PS&I in understanding the extent of the breach and, you know, co-wrote the report that highlighted what forces should be doing to improve their level of security. So there's, I think this is an area actually that we're fairly mature in, to be honest, because I think we recognise that it's a constant threat.
Sorry, I was just going to say though, and it's a bit like all the other areas of data and analytics, so I don't want to sound like I'm banging the drum, but we've got some permanent resource sitting in the Police Digital Service that really helped with the National Monitoring Centre and cybersecurity. Everything else is done on volunteers. So when Claire did that report for PS&I, she did it on top of a day job and had to get released by her chief constable. Doesn't feel, I mean, she did an amazing job, but as an investment for the future, that doesn't feel right for an area where technology is costing something like £300 billion or something like that across the Home Office and policing together. And we've got people on a volunteer basis trying to marshal and manage that. And if nothing else, that's exhausting, I'll be honest. But that's not the balance of power or resources to get that done.
And that's, and Amy, that's the important bit about police reform. There needs to be some changes, doesn't there?
Absolutely.
So again, it's great that people are seeing the value of data and there is some investment going into it, but is it enough? Is it going to be enough for 2045? And the reality is, if we utilise data right, as you've touched on, the benefits to the public are massive. So again, it's that sea change, isn't it, and recognising. So,
but it's the people. It's the people side of it. I mean, in the private sector, you've got CDOs now, you know, chief data officers, and that's their job. And data, as we've seen in some of the forces, it shouldn't be seen as a project. It's part of a function. And quite often it's just seen as a project, we'll do that, and then the resources all disappear. And you go, well, this isn't going away. And it's never going to go away. So it does need actually positioned within an organisation appropriately.
And I think on the back of that, Graham, I think that we are suffering from the last sort of 15 to 20 years of underinvestment in data. You know, as Amy said, we know how much we spent on tech. We have no idea how much we spent on data at all.
Or how much we're spending that we don't need to. How much are we keeping alive in the cloud or on a server somewhere that we don't actually need to hold or we shouldn't be holding? I think you add that up across forces. It's a lot of money that you could be putting back into some other investment.
And that's the purpose of the podcast, to generate that conversation.
Yeah,
that's what we need to be doing. So again, let's looking ahead. And again, clearly policing can't stand alone on this. It's mm-hmm. part of the criminal justice system. We know some real challenges around that system at the moment. And again, the important bit around that integration, that flow of information at the right time. You're talking once and well piece. I like that, Aim. That's really good. I like that. I'll make sure that's
T-shirt.
For the post. Yeah, that's good. So in terms of what's happening around that integration with the wider criminal justice, give us a flavour of what's happening around that.
Yeah, so I think the one thing I'd say about data sharing, you've highlighted some of the barriers to that, which is like lack of standards or yeah. integration or, you know, doing things in silos is a problem. They're all overcomeable if people are prepared to put the effort in. I would say the thing that is the biggest barrier to data sharing, either in the criminal justice system itself or beyond with key partners like health or social yeah. services, is the culture of those sectors.
Yeah.
The culture of each of those sectors about what they're prepared to share is very, very different. So policing obviously has an evidence, need to know, get it disclosed at the very last minute. That's our approach, right? That's how we teach cops to think when they're running an investigation. Health, oh, it's the privacy and the sacrosanct relationship between the doctor and their patient. You know, this infests itself across each of those different sectors. So worth noting that point. But there are massive moves afoot, I think, certainly across the criminal justice system and out beyond into, there's a great lady who leads digital and data in NHS called Ming Tang. She's absolutely superb. The willingness now to realise we've got to get this right for the benefit of preventing future health disasters, future criminality. So there are big programmes already underway. So the criminal justice system's already got something called its Data Quality Improvement Programme. I know, could have had a sexier title. But that is about getting people from each of the partners, whether it's courts, prisons, probation, police, MOJ, talking about how are we going to join this information together? Where do we put it? How do we operate on it? And how do we all get access to it to understand our part of the puzzle? We're campaigning really, really hard for legislative change. That's the thing that's got to come. The change in government has slightly delayed what was called the Data Protection and Digital Information Bill, reinvigorated as the Digital Information and Smart Data Bill. But we're pushing really hard to remove some of the barriers to share with our partners. Because the beauty of policing is we have our own part of the act. The problem with policing is we have our own part of the act. So trying to share between our partners, it's not impossible. And it's all doable if you've got a risk-tolerant appetite to do so. But we're trying to break down some of those legislative barriers in the next wave of change. And the final thing I would say is there are some places who've really gone out on a limb to make this better for policing. So Wales has a co-located cross-partner stakeholder group where they regularly come together and very quickly bash out data sharing agreements that they need to get done. Same in London, funded by the Government Office for London. We've done exactly the same thing. We've employed a data sharing coordinator to try and sit across the 32 authorities and all the partners. And the same is happening at NPCC, where we support national initiatives with a data sharing panel who support and advise them. We've gone from years of getting data sharing agreements, you know, that's how long yeah. it used to take, down to weeks.
Yeah. Good, good.
Sorry, that was a bit of a diet.
No. It's an important issue,
isn't
it?
There's lots going on.
Yeah. So as we come towards the end of the podcast, because I've always run out of time, as we could spend lots of time talking about this because it's so, so important. Some reflections from both yourself, Amy, and Teresa in terms of what you think, how policing will be utilising data in 2045 going forward. So bear in mind, Amy, you will still like to be in policing.
Still there.
So start with yourself, Teresa. What do you think?
I won't be still in policing in 2045, I just want to say, because I'll be about 110. God, there's some really simple things, isn't there, that police officers have got data at their fingertips. A simple sort of statement like that actually means quite a lot, I think. So our data is better connected, our data is better quality. Our data is where we know it's going to be. We know why we've got it. We know how we're using it. So all of those, the governance around our data is where it needs to be. We've got a single version of the truth. Yeah. You'll know from your experience, Jason, what it's like, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning trying to find out everything you know about Teresa Ashforth, and you've got, you know, 27 different nominals. There's all of that that yeah. still happens now. We've got to do something to improve that, I think. The ability to share at scale and pace, Amy's already covered, that's a massive, massive benefit for policing. And the ability for us then to draw insight from that collective data, I think, is really important. And that's where some of the work that we're doing at the Home Office, some of the work we're doing with the data board around how we aggregate our data, how we acquire data to support the policing mission, I think will be really, really important. So for me, it's the basics landed.
Yeah, doing real wants and wealth.
Yeah, absolutely.
Amy?
Yeah, so look, it's going to sound like I'm being cynical. I'm not. But I think, what does the future look like? Every cop that we employ won't think twice about putting the information in right first time. We'll have made it as easy as possible through the technology we give them. They might even just walk about and collect it without even realising they're doing it through video and image recognition and entity recognition. But it will be collected once and well, at pace, at scale, and we'll be able to deliver it back at pace and scale. That's, to me, what good looks like. I think we will absolutely value specialists in what we would now call data and analysis, but I suspect it'll be called something else by 2045, a name that we haven't even got. That's what I think it will look like. I think we'll be dealing with crime types that are at scale in an online environment that's happening to us now, but we really haven't understood how to meet it because we've still got very traditional crimes happening. But, and nobody so far has said Gen AI, I don't think, but policing has got this special holding of data. It's massive. If you want to train machines to truly understand how to predict and forecast and resolve issues around that will mean fewer victims and more offenders apprehended, then we need to start targeting that kind of capability on the data holdings that we've got and learning in our own environment at scale. And that means everybody will have collectively come together to agree to share their data just inside the sector and use national systems to do that. Because if we can, we will be able to make much better decisions about what our policing structures look like and how we help victims. And there's a real opportunity there for us.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, Teresa.
Just one thing on the back of what you said earlier, Amy, about the value, that we know what the value of our data asset. We've got a pounds and pence value that we can then draw investment on, I think would be, that's our retire when we do that.
Okay, so we've got that. That's gone to the cloud, if that still exists in the future as well. So we'll be able to come back to that, won't we? So just a little bit of fun at the end of it. And again, I'm very conscious of time. So fact or fiction by 2045. I think we touched on a little bit of this. So through data, there'll be fewer victims and offenders. Just yes or no, Teresa?
Yes.
Yes.
Graham?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay, that's the three yeses. Next one. Officers will be able to predict where the next crime or antisocial behaviour incident will occur.
Yes-ish.
As long as it's ethical, yes.
Oh, we're not going to go there now. We haven't got time. Graham?
Yes, I think that's what you're looking for.
Okay, and the last one, which is always the contentious one, the only one so far, is RoboCop or RoboDog?
Dogs.
Amy?
You need to give him a cuddle, right?
No, cop.
Yeah, you can't see Amy's face as she's nodding her head saying, what are you talking about? So, okay, Graham, over to you.
Digital assistants.
That was on the list. Okay, right, we've done our time. As always, a massive thank you. The insights, I said we could talk about this all day, realistically. I think the important bit for me is data is really, really important. It's more important than technology and digital, if I'm very honest. Because if we get that bit right, the rest of it can come together. And you don't need to pay me any money, Amy, if I'm just saying that. Okay?
Join our gang now.
The important bit as well is leadership, though. So again, you've talked about what we're doing about future leaders, that bit about leadership at all levels to understand it and make sure they understand the quality. I'm going to finish off the once and well, because I think that's really important, isn't it? If we get that bit right, firstly, we save lots of money, we get better information, we make better decisions, and we keep the public safer as well. So, as always, a massive thank you to Exception for sponsoring this series. Again, please, please, please subscribe to the podcast on your favourite podcast service. In the next episode, we're going to build on the conversation around the future workforce and change in policing in 2045. But until next time, thanks for listening.
Thin Digital Line. Policing in the year 2045.